Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
All right, brace yourself, because this next story, I think, is going to get you very, very anxious. But I'm not going to lay it all out for you. We've got an investigative journalist who's done a lot of work, and they've been tracking this for a while. And as I said, just brace yourself, because I think there is a lot that we know that is happening with our state-owned entities. And for some, they just kind of go under the radar. Not enough of us are asking the questions. And something like this happens, we definitely need to raise some eyebrows. So Petro SA has been owed about 825 million rand from a company that didn't even have a contract with them. But to tell you more about this particular story is Susan Comrie, who's been watching this story for a while. And if my memory serves, I think they've been owed this 825 million for about a year now. Susan, good evening and welcome. And thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hi, Pamela. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. I want you to take us down this road little step by step, because yes, I think it's important for us to fully, fully appreciate what this means and where things went wrong. And maybe let's just give quickly quite a comprehensive understanding of Petro SA's mandate.
Yeah, absolutely. So Petro SA is the state-owned petroleum, oil and gas company. Now, its mandate is to help ensure that South Africa has access to petrol and diesel. And traditionally, Petro SA has had a role in refining. They've actually been involved in the refining of product. Mm. But once their refinery in Mossel Bay shut down, they essentially became a trading company. And over the last 5 years, they have grown astronomically. They've doubled their revenue. They're now a 23 billion rand a year company. And most of that business is from buying and selling diesel to Eskom, which gets burnt in the open cycle gas turbines, which is used to keep load shedding at bay. Now, our sort of back of the envelope calculation is that that probably transfers about half a billion rand a year from Eskom to Petro SA in terms of their profit margin on these very lucrative diesel transactions. But the question is, what is Petro SA doing with those profits that they're getting? What is, you know, how are they running their business? And anyone who's been kind of keeping an eye on Petro SA, as you've pointed out, it's one of those SOEs that just manages to kind of stay below the radar. They'll know that Petro SA has been in a terrible hole for years. Mm. And it sort of only seems to be getting worse. You know, this is a company, the last set of financials, they simply just stopped publishing their financials a few years ago. The last set that we managed to get hold of, we got a leaked copy of their 2024 financials. It shows they've got around 8 billion rand in trade payables, so 8 billion rand in unpaid bills. Now, that's a huge chunk of that is money that's owed to SARS that they haven't paid to SARS. There's also, you know, that on top of that, they've got a huge kind of unfunded rehabilitation liability, which means that if, you know, they shut down and disappear, well, that's up to government now to rehabilitate that land. So it's a company that has, you know, in theory, been doing very well out of the load shedding crisis. But when one gets a sort of peek inside, which is so rare because they are so secretive, what you see is that they have just been running things completely chaotically.
Susan, what I think is important for us to fully appreciate is, to your point about it's grown in the past 5 years. So it's not as if they're not doing business. So this trading has been really good. Eskom, as we all know, has had a lot of demand. And they, just to be clear, are not giving Eskom a discount. They are trading and selling from as an independent entity to another independent entity. They're not as if, you know, because they're selling to a government entity, it's cheaper. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, look, it may be sort of, Eskom had actually said to us that, when they buy from Petro SA, Petro SA does tend to give them slightly cheaper prices than some of the other oil majors. But to your point, this is not a case of one government entity passing it on a cost price to another government entity. This is a case of one government entity saying, well, we want to be a player in this business. We want to be an oil company. So we are going to make quite steep profit margins on every cargo of diesel that we sell you. Now, we would love to know exactly how much Petro SA makes It's one of the things that they refused to publicly disclose. We got a hold of a leaked internal memo from March this year. And what we can see is PetroSA sort of discussing, look, if we take this cargo of diesel and we sell it to the oil industry, we're barely going to break even. If we take the same cargo of diesel and we sell it to Eskom, they're talking about sort of between 30 and 50 million rand margin. So it's a very profitable business, but how they've been running it is quite shocking.
Okay, so we obviously know, because it's been, you know, Eskom has been quite open about this, that they needed a lot of diesel during our crisis point. They needed a lot of diesel, and because of PetroSA's mandate, it was a good thing for them to make sure that they stock up on diesel. However, when things started stabilizing, how come PetroSA did not anticipate that the demand would lessen, or even if it did from Eskom, they would have a plan as to where then they would be selling this petrol or diesel to, if Eskom doesn't take the diesel that they had already paid for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those classic cases of, you know, the tide goes out and that sort of exposes people who have been kind of trading recklessly. And we can really see that already, even before load shedding kind of comes to an end last year. We can see that PetroSA was trading incredibly recklessly. Now, how do we know that? So if we look at their financials, we can see what is called demurrage costs. And that's essentially the fees you pay when a ship has to sit offshore, an oil tanker sits offshore waiting to discharge. Now, those fees, to give you an idea, per day, PetroSA is paying in the region of $35,000 per day, 650,000 rand per day for an oil tanker just to sit there. In the last financial year that we can see, PetroSA's demurrage fees went up 11-fold. So they went from 34 million to 389 million rand. And that's just money that is wasted just because we have ships sitting there that can't discharge because a buyer hasn't been lined up. And so, as you say, what happens is, you know, load shedding suddenly, you know, tapers off. PetroSA is suddenly caught because it's ordered all of this diesel. And suddenly it has to try and find buyers. And that's where the narco deal comes in.
Would there be off-takers? In other words, if Eskom was not buying this diesel, are there other options?
I mean, there should be. We are, you know, because a lot of our refineries have shut down, we are a net importer of diesel into South Africa. Mm. In theory, PetroSA should be able to call up any of the major oil companies and sell this cargo. Mm. Now, we can't tell, and unfortunately they won't speak to us about this, but from the memos that we've seen, the internal memos, we can't really see any sign that they went out and tested the market. You know, instead they decide to settle on this very small company, Narco Energy. It's a new player in the market. It's only been around for sort of 2 years at this point. And they decide they're going to sell this massive cargo of diesel to them.
So, and the reason I asked the question is just to get a sense of how difficult it would be to trade. But if they've been trading for 5 years, one would get the sense that it's, you know, it's what they do. It's their business. So they would be able to trade. I also want to clarify that by virtue of the cargo sitting on, you know, waiting for somebody to come and offload it, means that there isn't storage capacity.
Yeah, I mean, look, storage is a real issue in South Africa. It's one of the big shortages that we have. You know, and so it requires companies to really manage their inventory really carefully. So this idea of just kind of buying huge numbers of cargoes and then struggling to place them, it's really very reckless. And our assumption had always been that Eskom would ultimately pick up the tab for those costs. Mm-hmm. But Eskom was very clear with us. They twice came back to us and they said, no, we do not pick up the tab. Mm. So what it seems like is that those costs are hitting PetroSA's bottom line. Mm. And it contributes to this growing operating loss that we see inside PetroSA, where PetroSA is doing more business than ever. The business is more profitable than ever, but yet it is making even bigger losses.
So we then make the assumption that from the little that we know, there really wasn't any attempt to go out there trading with, you know, the major oil companies. Do we, I mean, we are almost certain about that, are we not?
I mean, it's hard to say. We can kind of read between the lines. There's certainly one of the questions that we had asked them is to say, well, didn't you test the market with someone else? Mm. Because one of the things that becomes apparent with the Naco deal is that PetroSA is going to have to sell this fuel at quite a substantial discount. Mm. You know, initially, we're not quite sure what the discount was that Naco initially asked for. They then come back to PetroSA and say, actually, we'd like a bigger discount. So they eventually walk away with around a 96 million rand discount on this fuel. Now, whether that's market related, that's debatable. They sort of certainly told us that they felt that the price that they had been given was market related. But it does mean that PetroSA makes a 19 million rand loss on this cargo. But that's not really the problem. Mm. You know, if you can write, if you can do, say it's a 19 million rand loss, that I get the money tomorrow, that's fine.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, is that we are talking about incredibly valuable cargoes of diesel. The price is moving all the time. So you really can't afford to sort of let these deals stretch out because you're, you know, you haven't protected yourself against the price moving. And that's really where PetroSA gets caught out. This deal gets strung out for a long time. You know, Naco can't come up with the money. They can't put up the guarantees. It really becomes a complete shambles.
I mean, you've given us a slight sense of this small new company, a new entrance, and there's nothing wrong with that. We are supposed to encourage new business and all of that and people to new players. But who is Naco? They've been around for 2 years, you say, but who are they?
I mean, it's an interesting question. They, you know, they're virtually unheard of outside of PetroSA. But inside PetroSA, they seem to have, you know, they've done very well. They were kind of, you know, they had only been in business for 6 months and they were one of the bidders for the gas to liquids refinery in Mossel Bay, the deal that ultimately went to Gazprom Bank. They didn't get that deal, but they do end up landing a 3-year contract to sell unleaded petrol to PetroSA. So they've really done well. You know, you start seeing their name being mentioned in kind of PetroSA documents. And it's been one of the questions for us about, you know, where has Naco kind of come from? But I think this deal really does illustrate, you know, the risk for PetroSA. We are talking about this is not, you know, give a small company a chance, start with small contracts and then see how we go. You know, a cargo of diesel starts at sort of 600 million rand. That's the size of the deals that are being done on a day-to-day basis inside PetroSA.
Were you able to scratch deeper? Do you know who's behind the company, Naco?
We do have some ideas. It's, you know, it's one of those sort of corporate processes of there are companies that own companies. Mm, and so we're still kind of getting to the bottom of exactly who they are. So, I mean, I must say that Naco was quite forthcoming with us. Mm-hmm. PetroSA sort of refused to speak to us at all on this. Naco was more forthcoming. They did answer our questions, you know, but they themselves concede that, I mean, this deal was, there were all kinds of things done in this deal that weren't regular. You know, things like having a proper contract in place. You know, Naco says to us, one of the reasons they couldn't get financial guarantees is that, you know, they're sort of, their funders were sort of saying, well,
where's the contract?
Where's the contract? We can't give you the money if there's no contract. Mm. And so there's no financial guarantees. There's no proper contract in place. Essentially, they get given credit of 933 million rand for this transaction. And PetroSA tells them, okay, but you have to pay us within 60 days. 60 days comes and goes. The money's not there. And so really it kind of, you know, it highlights the sort of risky way in which PetroSA has been carrying out its business. You know, we're a country that loves gambling, but is it right for a state-owned entity to be gambling with billion rand cargoes? That just seems crazy to me.
I want to be fair and say, let us just say, this is just a company that is starting out and, you know, was given an opportunity. And like all businesses, sometimes at the beginning, they make mistakes and so on. And maybe that's the explanation. What I don't understand, though, and look, they were lucky, you know, somebody gave them a break and all of that. What I don't understand is that are we possibly looking at a bigger governance problem within PetroSA?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we have been knocking on the door for so long at PetroSA. We've just had this inkling that there's been something amiss there. You know, this is a government entity that is playing in, you know, oil deals, gas deals, diesel deals. These are the kinds of deals that often are very, very problematic, that attract a lot of bad behavior. We've been asking PetroSA for the past 2 years to disclose the names of the companies that got these massive diesel contracts. But it's not just that. You know, if you look at, for instance, some of the other deals that we've written about recently in PetroSA, the Gazprom bank deal, the deal with the sanctioned Russian bank, you know, the Equator deal, which most people will sort of know better as the deal where PetroSA gave this massive sort of, you know, 20 billion rand contract to a company owned by soccer boss Lawrence Malozzi, only for it to turn out that the company had been put into liquidation. I mean, it feels like every time one gets a look inside at PetroSA, it's just more and more astonishing. And it's one of the reasons why we've been fighting so hard to say you have to make this stuff public. You know, also just to say we're at a point where PetroSA is in the process, parts of it are being taken and folded into a new state-owned petroleum company. But we can't just kind of say, well, look, the old one really didn't work out. Let's start a new, you know, state-owned petroleum company and hope that this time we'll do it better. We need to actually have a proper look at what's been happening inside PetroSA because of how much money is involved, because of the huge potential risk to the taxpayer if PetroSA folds, but also because of load shedding, because it has been such an existential threat to the country. I believe that we deserve to know who the companies are that profited off that crisis.
So Susan, this is an entity that would be sitting under Department of Energy now.
It sits under the Department of Minerals and Petroleum. So it's part of the the group that sits under Guedemontes.
Yes, I get it now because energy is Ramokopa, and this is minerals and petroleum.
Yes, it's moved across, and it really is seeing itself as being a kind of, you know, creating a massive integrated oil gas trading behemoth. So that's essentially what they're trying to build there.
Any response from the department? Have you reached them at all?
No response from the department. I mean, on this one, we were dealing directly with PetroSA. And as I've said, PetroSA has sort of taken a position for, you know, a number of months now that, you know, they just very politely respond to our questions and say, we're just not going to say anything. So it's frustrating for us. That's sort of their approach has been to ignore our PIA requests, ignore our media requests. You know, where they do respond, they respond sort of with a polite no thanks. But it's one of the reasons that we've carried on sort of, you know, we're currently in the process of taking our fight to the information regulator.
Yes.
To try to force them to get PetroSA to disclose. And so we're hoping that process is going to bear fruit.
What kind of response, and not that you've asked them, but just from your own observation, the kind of oversight that Parliament has had over PetroSA?
Yeah. I mean, this has been another bugbear of mine. You know, before we were even asking PetroSA about the diesel contracts, Parliament had asked PetroSA to disclose the diesel contracts, and they refused. They simply refused to tell Parliament. You know, there's been a number of times where PetroSA has gone to Parliament and Parliament has asked PetroSA to disclose. For instance, you know, last year, PetroSA appointed a new CEO. He was in the position for only 6 months and then was suspended. And when Parliament asked PetroSA to disclose, what are the reasons that you suspended him? They refused to say. They sort of said, well, it's a labor relations issue. And we managed to get a copy of the suspension letter, and we wrote about this. And it really looks like the charges were incredibly flimsy that PetroSA had come up with. But again, it comes back to a question of, is there really appetite from Parliament, from those MPs, from a portfolio committee, which is controlled by the ANC, to bring Guedemontes's kind of, you know, pet project in and hold them accountable? I mean, I really hope that Parliament does, that some of the information that we start putting out, that Parliament kind of steps up. Because I really do think that, you know, we cannot wait for a state-owned entity to collapse and leave massive debts for the taxpayer to pick up and only then say, oh, actually, maybe we should have had asked some tougher questions of them. We have to do it while they're still around before, you know, the records disappear.
So as far as you know, has PetroSA actually done anything about getting this money from NACO, or is it just, you know, you as journalists asking the question? Is there anything happening between them since they've been owed so much money from by NACO?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. When we started asking questions, you know, NACO told us that they were in negotiations with PetroSA. You know, they had stopped paying PetroSA. They had initially started paying them in tranches and then they simply stopped in December. They said they were in negotiations with PetroSA. They'd said they didn't want to discuss it. It was terribly sensitive. They told us that PetroSA also, they also had a counterclaim against PetroSA. And so they were trying to kind of, you know, offset the two claims and settle up. They told us just before we published that they had reached a settlement with PetroSA, but we haven't been able to confirm that with PetroSA. We don't know the terms of the settlement. And crucially, we don't know if PetroSA really got value for money there. And that's really part of what we're looking at in the second part of our investigation, which is still going to be published, which is about the counterclaim that NACO has against PetroSA, which is an even more fascinating story, I have to say.
Well, does it mean they've stopped doing business with PetroSA completely, apart from this counter and, you know, what you're going to tell us in your next publication? Have they stopped doing business with them?
Not as far as I can tell.
So it may be this is what's happening on the side, but business continues as usual with other transactions.
It's a fascinating question. And again, you know, these are the types of questions that it would be great if Parliament could regularly call in PetroSA and saying, you know, what's going on here? I mean, one of the other things that, you know, PetroSA that recently came out on Friday when they announced the new state-owned petroleum company, they also sort of mentioned, oh, yes, by the way, that deal with Gazprom Bank, that's we're going to have to start looking for a new buyer on that one. I mean, that's a tragedy in a way, not that we're losing the deal with Russia's bank. That was always an incredibly problematic deal. But the tragedy is that we have all of these jobs in that refinery that we're desperately trying to preserve. We've wasted 2 years on a flirtation with the Russians, which by my sort of rough estimate has cost us around R1 billion, just because we've been paying salaries to people to stay in those positions. And we're starting back at square one. So those, you know, all of these kind of transactions just are sort of urgently calling for someone to sort of step forward and hold PetroSA accountable. And we're trying to do our best. But, you know, we are the media and it's sometimes easy for them to ignore us.
Susan Comrie, appreciate your time. Really, thank you so much. And looking forward to part two, or is it three or four? You've done a lot of these. But
I know. It feels like every time we think we're done with PetroSA, just something else comes up. It's been a fascinating journey. But yeah, absolutely. We'll try and get that second part out as soon as we can. And then hopefully can come back and tell you more about it.
Appreciate your time. Thank you so much for that. She's an investigative journalist at Amabungane Center for Investigative Journalism.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.